We are in Matthew 18. Let me just take a moment to turn there myself. And I wanted to actually get a big question answered right from the very beginning. Is this the good or bad daylight savings time? Do we lose or gain an hour? We lose. Okay, so just so that I know, just so that you guys know, we lose an hour. And now that that's probably the biggest question you had today from the announcements and from, you know, whatever we're doing today. So make sure you know that. We lose an hour. We're in Matthew 18, and today we are tackling a difficult subject, which is forgiveness. And I need to find my notes. Why is everyone paying attention to me? Okay, here we are. Okay, we are addressing this issue of forgiveness, and it's actually interesting. Every once in a while in my family, I think I've mentioned this before, we end up talking about heaven and what heaven's going to be like. And I think the conversations, at the end of the conversations, we always kind of say something along the lines of, well, I guess we really aren't going to know till we get there. And that's true to a large extent. But we ask questions like this, like, are we going to eat in heaven? And, you know, are we going to work? Are there going to be pets there? Are we going to listen to music? What's the music going to be like? You know, we ask all these types of detailed questions. And there really isn't, again, there really isn't a lot of answer to that. One of the weird things, I think, still to me when I think about heaven is thinking about the fact that there are some things that we have now or that we do now or that we need to do now that we are not going to have to do in heaven. And that sometimes feels a little bit strange to me because I can't imagine what life would be like without certain things. One of the things that we won't need to do anymore when we get to heaven, though, is forgiveness. Now, forgiveness is one of those things when we get to heaven, we'll never need to forgive another person ever again. And that's actually a neat thing. I don't know what that's like because I think in our world, we're always forgiving someone of something. Something's always happening. You know, there's always kind of relational friction in different areas. That's reality. You know, living in a sinful world, we hurt each other. We sin against each other. And the consequences of that are felt and forgiveness is needed. That doesn't always mean we forgive, but the need to forgive is always there. The closer you are to people, the more that need comes into play. And again, doesn't mean you always have to forgive, but it's always there. It's weird for me to think that in heaven, you know, we're not going to need to do that anymore. You know, no more relational friction, no more misunderstandings, no more, you know, intentional hurting, no more sinning against each other. And that's going to be a nice thing. Now, it's really going to be a nice thing. Unfortunately, in this world, we do have to forgive a lot. There's a lot of things that happen, a lot of ways in which people hurt us, a lot of ways that we hurt other people. And unfortunately, sometimes that's worse inside the church, isn't it? You know, sometimes in the church, there's more pain, there's more difficulty, there's more clashes. The things that do happen seem to be even worse. You know, there's a sense in which if it happens in church, it's harder because, you know, I expected better of you, or, you know, you expected better of me. And there's a lot of things along with that. So today, when we get into Matthew 18, we're looking at a very specific section. We're looking at Jesus is coming off a teaching about judging one another, about what you do when your brother sins against you. Peter has this question. He says, you know, how often should I forgive my brother? And that launches Jesus into an answer and ultimately into a parable. And it's a parable I think a lot of you have heard, and when you listen to it, this is actually a very difficult saying of Jesus. You know, when he calls us to forgive in this way, it's very difficult to hear because we don't naturally function this way. So as we go through this passage, we're going to see essentially three things about forgiveness, and we'll lay them out, and hopefully it'll instruct us of what our lives look like and how we deal with one another. The first is we're going to be looking at the nature of forgiveness. You know, this passage tells us that forgiveness looks a certain way, that it works a certain way, that in God's kingdom, it has a certain function. Second thing we're going to see is the cost of forgiveness. There is a cost associated with forgiving people, and we'll see what that looks like. The third thing we'll see is the reason for forgiveness. So as we look at this, we'll look at first the nature of forgiveness, cost of forgiveness, and ultimately the reason for forgiveness. And hopefully, again, through that, we'll learn how to put it into better practice in our lives. So first, you know, we look at this passage, and the first thing I want you to notice is the nature of forgiveness. A little bit more specifically, this passage shows us that the nature of forgiveness, there's an indiscriminate quality to forgiveness, the way that Jesus talks about it here. Let me read verses 21 and 22, and I'll show you what that means. Okay, verse 21, it says, "Then Peter came up and said to him," being Jesus, he said, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me, and I forgive him as many as seven times?" Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven." And again, this is very well known. What we're seeing here is we're seeing an extended period. If you look at the chapters before and after it, we're looking at this extended period of teaching. Chapter 17, we have the transfiguration, and 18, there's this long extended teaching, and Jesus is using parables. And again, if you look at the verses right above it, he's talking about what do you do if your brother sins against? Will you bring you let them know of their sin, and then a certain rigmarole you go through if you respond to it or if they don't. And based on that, you know, Peter has kind of a follow-up question. That's essentially what Peter's question is. You know, Jesus is talking about when your brother sins against you, this is how you react to it. You go to him. And Peter has this question. He says, well, how many times am I supposed to forgive him? And that's a very valid question. You know, how many times am I supposed to forgive my brother who sins against me? Very important question. It's a little bit more interesting when you begin to study this and you find out that that was not just an important question for Peter, that was a very important question for people in general. It was a question that rabbis had struggled with, that faithful Jewish men and women tried to figure out, is how many times do I have to forgive someone? If it's my brother, if it's my neighbor, if it's my wife, if it's my father, if it's, you know, whoever. How much patience should I really have with them, especially if it's the same thing, right? And all of us have experienced that. We've had siblings or we've had friends, and sometimes they do the same things to hurt us again and again and again, or we do that to other people. And so Peter has a very genuine question. I mean, how often do I need to forgive them? And what's interesting is Peter suggests an answer. He says, even seven times. Now, the reason why that's a good number and the reason why that's important a number is because actually during that time, most rabbis would have given the instruction that basically you need to forgive three times. And any more than three times is unnecessary. In other words, the basic cultural understanding was if someone keeps hurting you, don't be stupid. That was the cultural understanding. If someone keeps hurting you, don't be stupid. You know, three times is plenty. If they do more than that, then you should know by now. You should know that all you're going to do is you're going to get hurt. Person's going to do it over and over and over again. And I mean, why should you become a doormat? Three times, any more than that, and it's fine if you don't forgive them. And that was, again, very basic cultural understanding. Not for non-believers, but for Jews. That's what they were taught very directly. Is, hey, you know, forgive someone, and even if it goes to three times, I mean, forgive them. Well, what if it's more? Well, if it's more, then, I mean, that's their problem. You know, then forget them. And so, you know, here you have Jesus, you have Peter asking this question, and you have him extending that. You know, he's not taking what the rabbis were telling him, what people typically believed. He was saying, Jesus, should we even forgive them seven times? I mean, Peter's being magnanimous. He's saying, should we, you know, I mean, you tell us about grace and you tell us about all these wonderful things. Jesus, does that mean that we should be even more so, even seven times? And what's Jesus' reply? It's not seven times, he says 70 times seven. Now, I don't want to concentrate too much on the number, but I want you to notice this. Jesus' instruction is that his followers should be exponentially better at forgiving and offering forgiveness than even the best Jew. And that's essentially what he's saying. He's telling his followers that they should be exponentially more forgiving than anyone else on the planet. That's a challenging thing. I mean, it's one thing to be forgiving. It's another thing to be more forgiving than other people. It's another thing to be exponentially more forgiving than anyone you've ever met. But that's what Jesus is saying. It's not three times. It's not seven times. It's 70 times seven. And you know, when you look into every religion preaches the importance of forgiveness. That's not unique about Christianity. I'm not going to stand here and say, oh, you know, this is what makes Christianity so unique is we talk about forgiveness, others don't. No, every religion talks about forgiveness. Every religion values forgiveness. Every religion places an importance in this concept. You know, there are some that are obviously more strict. There are some that are less strict about some of the regulations tied in with it. But in that sense, I mean, we're not unique. But at the same time, we are, and here's why. I think we'll see at the very end, you'll see that there is a uniqueness to why we forgive. And again, we'll address that as we get towards the end. But all religions preach the importance of forgiveness. Again, you can go next door to the synagogue, you can go to a Buddhist temple. I think I saw a Buddhist temple down in Ashburn, and I think I saw it and I was shocked, but then I was like, oh yeah, I always see that. You can go to a lot of different places, a lot of different people talk about forgiveness. Even your run-of-the-mill spiritual guru that knows nothing about formal religion will tell you that forgiveness is a good thing, that it's spiritually healthy, that it's spiritually good for you. But I think what's interesting about what Jesus says here, at least, is, again, I don't want to pay too much attention to the number, but I want you to notice that Jesus doesn't put any strings to that forgiveness. In other words, he's talking about a forgiveness that is absolutely indiscriminate, right? He doesn't say, well, forgive your brother if they weren't intending to do something like that. Or forgive these people in your life again and again and again, but not your enemies, right? Or he doesn't say, well, you know, if it's a small sin, then forgive it as much as you're able to. If it's a big sin, I mean, how can you forgive that? Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus essentially lays out this blanket statement, and by doing that, he's telling us that the forgiveness that we are to offer is unconditional. It's indiscriminate, that there's no stipulations, there's no conditions, that essentially we are to just forgive, that if we're followers, that's just what we do, and that there's no consideration in there. But that's not how we work, do we? I mean, there are a lot of stipulations on there. You know, when someone hurts us and when we are in that spot of trying to decide whether we are going to forgive or not, there are a lot of conditions. One of them is repetition. Is this someone who's hurt me a lot of times like this? And if it's a one-off, if this is the first time something happened, then sure, I mean, I forgive you. If they've burned us again and again and again the exact same way, no. Why would I? Or, you know, we're more likely to forgive someone who's a close friend rather than someone who's not. Tend to see things through their eyes a little bit easier. It's easier to say, you know what, I forgive you. I mean, there's a lot more relational consequences if we don't and those types of things. And if we don't forgive an enemy, I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, we weren't friends anyway. You know, or again, you know, degrees of offense. The small one, sure, no skin off my back, forgive you, bygones be bygones. But the bigger things, I mean, we have to pause, don't we? Peter doesn't put any qualifications on. He doesn't say, well, Jesus, if it's big, I mean, how many times should we forgive that? Oh, Jesus, if it's small, how many times should we forgive? Oh, Jesus, if it's my friend, if it's someone who I'm around all the time and they keep doing it, I mean, how many times should I do that? Jesus, if it's the same person doing the same thing again and again, I mean, should I keep forgiving them? I mean, he doesn't say any of that. Essentially, what he's doing is he's showing us that forgiveness is indiscriminate. You know, that as believers, forgiveness isn't based on the amount of hurt we feel or the person who did it or the repetition of what they're doing to us. Forgiveness is just forgiveness. It finds its root, it finds its foundation. Its nature is that it is unconditional. It's something that is handed out and given. And again, you know, that's not the way we operate. We discriminate. We look at situations differently. We look at people differently. We look at repetition differently. And at times, forgiveness comes very easily. At times, it comes very it's very difficult. But Jesus is saying we are to forgive anyone for anything. That basically, all can and should be forgiven. And that's a huge challenge. You know, if you don't feel challenged by that, then you haven't really faced situations where you haven't really faced huge difficulties that need forgiveness. Either that or you ignore the really bad things because you go, yeah, who would forgive that? That's a huge challenge, to forgive indiscriminately, regardless of all these other things. Okay? So that's the first thing we see, is we see the indiscriminate nature of forgiveness. Jesus doesn't put any qualifications on it, any stipulations on it. He says, forgive 70 times 7. That's how your forgiveness should be. Okay? That's the first difficult thing to hear. Second thing we find out is Jesus starts telling this parable, and the parable teaches us about the costliness of forgiveness. Let's go to verse 23. And let me read through the parable relatively quickly. It says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the master of the servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when the same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him began to choke him, saying, pay what you owe. Okay, so we have this parable that Jesus tells. We have this servant and this king, and the servant owes him a lot of money. The number that we're given here is 10,000 talents, which is an immense number. Essentially, for a lot of you, you have Bibles that have a little footnotes at the bottom. One talent is essentially for a menial, for someone who works in a field of labor. It's 20 years' wages. And so it's a lot of money. This isn't just one talent, it's 10,000 talents. So if you do some calculations, one talent is 20 years of wages. 10,000 talents is, how many years is that? I think it's like 200,000, 200,000 years of labor, okay? So let's use as a baseline $50,000 per year for someone who's working kind of menial labor. And that might be high, that might be low. Essentially what we're looking at is we're looking at a sum of $10 billion. So here's a servant who owes his king $10 billion. Now, one of the questions is, how can you accrue that kind of debt? Well, Jesus isn't talking about details. I mean, maybe he wagered a lot. Maybe he, you know, kept tripling, quadrupling as he bet on horses, bet on, you know, football games, bet on the Olympics, whatever else is going on. But he's accumulated this massive debt. Now, for someone who's making $50,000 a year, there's no chance they could pay off $10 billion. I mean, there's no way if he scrimped and saved and had his paycheck garnished, there's no way to pay that off. And in some ways, that's the point of Jesus' story. But I want you to notice something else, too. There's an impossibly huge number. Now, usually, again, we fixate on the amount, and we see how much it is, and we think, you know, wow, that's a lot that's been forgiven. I want you to realize this. No matter how rich this king is, it is going to cost him something to forgive the debt. Right? Think about that for a second. This king could own all the land that you see. He could stand in a spot, turn around, and everything could belong to him. $10 billion is still a lot of money. Right? This isn't thousands of dollars. This isn't tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, $10 billion is a lot to forgive. It isn't just, okay, yeah, I forgive your debt, tear up your piece of paper, you're done. No. I mean, the king, no matter how rich he is, it's painful. I mean, you know, for most of us, we have a hard time, like, forgiving small debts, don't we? I mean, small things, and it's difficult. I mean, this is $10 billion. I think what Jesus is trying to bring across is actually very, very important. You know, no matter how rich this king is, forgiveness comes at a cost. And you know, for us, we instinctually know that forgiveness requires a cost, don't we? That's one of the reasons why we don't forgive. We don't forgive because we know there's a cost associated with it. We know that there's a cost to it. Matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why, you know, if someone hurts you and they know they've hurt you and they don't feel bad enough about it, you don't want to forgive them. Why? Well, because they haven't expressed enough, like, pain or anguish over it. And because of that, you feel like they haven't really bore the brunt of what you felt. right? Or what do? Someone hurts us, and we begin to shun them. Because we want to hurt them. No, we do things to inflict pain on them. Why? Because it's inflicting pain on us. You know, we instinctually know that forgiveness demand that it means that we're going to experience pain. It means that we're going to experience loss. And you know, the loss sometimes is the fact that we're the ones who are hurt by this whole thing and the other person isn't. And to forgive them means that somehow they get away scot-free, and we can't deal with that. You know, those are difficult situations, and we don't want to forgive because we know we're the ones swallowing the pain. We know that there's pain involved. Or it's this kind of pain. Someone hurts us, and we don't really want to forgive them because we want to hold it over them. Right? We want to bring it back again and again and again and again and again. We want to use it to our advantage. And if we just forgive them, then it's a loss. We don't get to hold it over them anymore. I don't know how much that happens in friendships. I think I tend to see that more in marriages. You know, where one spouse has something and they just hold it over the other. And they never really forgive because the pain is that I won't have that to say anymore. Well, the truth is, you still do because they still say it when you forgive. You know, it still comes out. But the truth is that we know that there's pain involved. We know that we're going to lose something. We instinctually know that. That's you know, that's what the king shows us. The king shows us that forgiveness comes at a cost. The king can't just forgive it and then go back and say, you know, I need a couple $1,000 from you. Can't do that. It's gone. He's lost something. For you and I, when we forgive, there's pain involved. We lose something. And even if we don't know exactly what that means, we know instinctually that we lose something. You know, we know something happens. You know, we know that to forgive requires us taking on more pain. It means taking on more burden. It's on taking more upon ourselves and not putting it on the other person. And you know, that's actually a very difficult thing to do. I think that's one of the reasons why forgiveness is difficult, because we instinctually know that we're going to shoulder the burden for this sin. You know, we're not going to place the burden on the other person. We're not going to punish them for it. We're going to carry that. We're going to bear the brunt of that. But let me tell you, the cost of unforgiveness is painful too. Matter of fact, I would say the cost of unforgiveness is greater. There's actually a quote by C.S. Lewis. I completely forgot I need it for my phone, so let me pull it up. But some of you have heard this before. It's actually a quote about love, but I think you can apply it. C.S. Lewis says this in The Four Loves. He says, "To love at all is to be vulnerable. To love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in a casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable." And you know, essentially, what C.S. Lewis is talking about is the same thing that happens to us that's the cost of not forgiving. The cost of not forgiving is we shut off ourselves, we close our hearts. And eventually, the more we close our hearts off, the harder it becomes. And the sad thing is, it becomes hard towards others, towards the person who's hurting us, it becomes hard towards others. And eventually it becomes hard towards God himself. There are terrible costs to unforgiveness. Matter of fact, when I was younger, there was a person who borrowed $50 from me and never paid me back and never forgave them and lost the friendship. And you know, sometimes there's not a day that goes by where I don't think about that $50. That's just a joke. You know, there's a terrible cost to the fact that, you know, that when we close ourselves off and when we don't forgive, it breaks everything, doesn't it? It breaks not just the friendship, it begins to break us too. You know, our hearts become cold, our hearts become hard, and all of a sudden, that's not just us and our friend, it's us and others, it's us and God. And the cost associated with it is tremendous. So, I mean, that's what Jesus is pointing out. There is a cost to forgiveness. There's also a cost to unforgiveness, but there's a cost to forgiveness. You decide to forgive and you are taking on pain. You are taking on difficulty. You are taking on heartache. You are taking on something that you want to put on someone else, that it is difficult. And again, that's recognized. What we have to get to, though, is I think this also tells us, you know, through Jesus' story, he tells us the true reason why we do forgive. And I think this is unique to Christianity. Other religions will talk about forgiveness. Other religions will talk about why or how to forgive. Christianity is absolutely unique. Now, here's what I want you to understand. There's a lot of ways that I could try to talk you into being forgiving. For instance, what did I just do in point two? It was cost-benefit analysis, right? I could appeal to that. I could say, here's all the terrible things that happen to you if you don't forgive. Here's all the wonderful things that happen if you do forgive. Make your choice, right? And you could do the spreadsheet, pros and cons. You could list out all the pros, list out all the cons. And essentially the argument is, it is better to forgive than to not forgive. Cost is much worse. And for some people, that's exactly where they live. That's what they want to hear. That's what they need to hear. But what I'm doing is I'm kind of playing on your selfishness, right? You know, I could appeal to that. I could say it's much better to forgive than to not forgive. And again, that could be appealing to some. But I'm not going to do that. There's another way I could approach it. And the other way is this. I could appeal to your moral pride. And I could put it this way. I could say, you know what? This world is full of good and bad people. There are good people who show kindness, who are compassionate, who are loving. And when they face these relational issues, I mean, they forgive. They are the salt of the earth. They are the reason why things work well. And there are also bad people. There are people who take advantage, who hurt people and don't care about forgiveness, don't care about being forgiven. They just march along, they trample on people, and they do what they want. You wouldn't want to be a bad person, would you? And I could push that. I'm not doing, you know, not making a huge push now, but, you know, some places you hear that. And I could say, you really don't want to be one of those bad people. I mean, you know, honestly, you want to be one of the good people, don't you? And I could appeal to your sense of moral pride, and we could push those buttons, and you could say, gosh, yeah, I know so many bad people who just don't care about people, and they're unloving, and they trample on people, and I don't want to be someone like that. I want to be a good person. And, you know, again, maybe for some of you that works. I could also do this. I could appeal to your sense of community, and I could walk you through this. I could say, you know, well, ultimately, you know, being unforgiving is socially destructive. You know, when you don't forgive other people, I mean, that breaks relationships, and relationships are the fabric of community, which is ultimately the fabric of society. And so when you're not forgiving, when you decide that you're going to hold a grudge or that you're going to, you know, not forgive this person, what you're doing is you're undermining community, whether that's in the church, whether that's in your neighborhood, whether that's in society as a large. And so if we have enough people in this world who are unforgiving, we are going to tear our society apart. And we don't want to do that, do we? I mean, we should forgive one another. We should be gracious with each other, especially in the church, because this is where we are the kingdom of God. And in the kingdom of God, things shouldn't be torn apart. Things should be structured, and they should build up. And we don't want to be like that. And again, that could be a very appealing argument for some people. But what's interesting to me is Jesus doesn't use any of those arguments. When you go into verse 31, listen to the argument that he uses. He's telling this story about a servant who owes a king a lot of money. He's forgiven. The servant runs into another servant who owes him some money, doesn't forgive that. And this is kind of Jesus' moral to his story. Listen to verse 31. It says, when his fellow servant saw what had taken place, the fact that, you know, the servant who was forgiven much went home and yet didn't forgive this other servant who owed him just a little bit, says verse 31, he says, when his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed. And they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should you not have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you? Now, verse 33 is the kicker. And in the story, what Jesus is saying is this. He's saying that this servant should have forgiven this other servant's debt because of what he had been forgiven of. And because he didn't, these other servants were angry and the king was angry. In other words, what Jesus says our reason for forgiveness is it says the reason why we should be forgiving in an indiscriminate way is because you and I have been forgiven indiscriminately. That God has forgiven you unconditionally through the death and resurrection of his Son. And you know what all this means? It means that if you're struggling to forgive someone, if you're listening to this today and you have someone from your present or from the past that something happened and you just said, I can't forgive them, or if you have certain degrees to which if someone does this, that's fine. If someone does this, I mean, forget it. If you're in either of those situations, it means that you really don't understand how much God has forgiven you. You will only forgive to the degree to which you have felt forgiven, to the degree to which you believe you are forgiven. And if you really don't see your sins as that bad, and if you really see salvation as not really a big deal because you were a pretty good person anyway, and Jesus kind of came in, he fixed the couple things that were, the couple leaky pipes and a couple messed up parts that were broken, but as a whole, he really didn't do much, then there are going to be a lot of people in your life that you never forgive. And you will harbor that anger and that bitterness with you, and you will feel absolutely justified. And you will go from place to place, and you will leave relationships in the wake, broken relationships everywhere. How does that change? You begin to realize how much you've been forgiven. You know, in the story, the first servant owes 10 billion. And then after he's forgiven, he finds someone who owes him a few thousand. That's the degree that we're dealing with. God, through Jesus Christ, has forgiven us of billions, and yet we quibble over thousands. How dare we? But you see, that's what makes Christianity unique. All other religions will say forgive because if you forgive, then there's something at the end of the rainbow for you. Then your God will be pleased and things will go well with you. And Christianity says no, the reason why you forgive is you have been forgiven of everything. Everything you have ever done, everything you ever thought. And that, my friend, is much worse than you realize. That isn't thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, that is billions. A debt that you would be shocked at if you saw what God had forgiven you of. And yet he did. And if you knew that, if you understood that, every other opportunity where you have to make a decision if you're going to forgive or not would be a pittance to you. If you understood it. And so how do we become more forgiving? Well, it starts one place. We first understand all that Jesus has forgiven of us. If you don't understand the 10 billion, you will not understand the thousands that you are owed. We first understand what Jesus has forgiven us of. And, you know, that's a perfect segue to get into communion, because communion is about the fact that Jesus forgave us, that through his life, through his death, we find forgiveness. If you're not sure how bad or how deep forgiveness goes or how much you owed to God, it cost Jesus his life. If all you owed was a few hundred dollars, a few thousand dollars, Jesus could have come down. He could have done a couple good things and said, ta-da,